Hi, this is Daniel Garber, the movies for culturalmining.com and CIUT 89.5 FM. All governments lie. So said I.F. Stone, an investigative journalist who uncovered countless government lies, malfeasance, and cover-ups. While most journalists based their stories on government press releases, Stone looked for news in politically available government and military records and statistics. From the 1950s to the 70s, the results could be found in the I.F. Stone Weekly, a popular newsletter published out of his own home. But with the rapid decline of news media, who is covering and uncovering these stories today? All Governments Lie, Truth, Deception, and the Spirit of I.F. Stone is a new documentary. It looks at I.F. Stone's legacy and the independent investigative journalists working in the U.S. today. The film was made by Fred Peabody, an award-winning journalist in his own right, who worked on CBC's The Fifth Estate, ABC's 2020, and Dateline NBC. This film is having its world premiere at the Toronto International Film Festival on December 9th, and I'm very pleased to have Fred Peabody here in studio to tell us more about All Governments Lie. Hi, Fred.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Thanks so much for coming in. And also, as I mentioned, thanks for letting me see an early version of the film so I know what I'm talking about.
What'd you think?
Great. Very interesting. In her book, Myra McPherson writes that journalist I.F. Stone went from iconoclast in the 1930s to icon in the 1960s. Why was Izzy Stone so important?
Well, Izzy Stone went from being an outsider, being somebody that the FBI, that J. Edgar Hoover's FBI followed around and snooped on and went through his garbage and his mail because he had the audacity to be critical of the government of the day and to be critical of the activities of Senator McCarthy and his witch hunting. And at that time, he was an outcast. He got to the point where nobody would hire him because he was considered, just too far left for the powers that were, certainly at the major newspapers. And he had worked at major newspapers in New York City back in the day in the 30s when there were some progressive but large major newspapers in New York City. He worked for a while for The Nation magazine, and then he found himself out of a job and basically decided he was going to have to start his own newsletter so that he could go on covering Washington and attempting to report the truth based on his own investigations of government documents. And he was amazing for going over the government's own documents and transcripts of Senate hearings and proving with those government documents that the government was in fact lying. And it's the kind of reporting that many, certainly the White House press corps of the day, were not doing, just like today, you might say.
Yeah, there's a good quote. He says, "The establishment reporters, without a doubt, know a lot of things that I don't know, but a lot of what they know isn't true."
Yeah.
Can you give some examples of the big government lies over the past 20, 30 years?
Well, by the way, that's a good example of, he was a very good-natured man, and, mm-hmm. and that was kind of a humorous remark, but, everything he said had a bite to it and a serious side to it as well. But he, let's say at the time that Lyndon Johnson wanted to basically have a war in Vietnam and arranged to have that happen, it appears, all the evidence points to a kind of trumped-up incident in the Gulf of Tonkin.
Tonkin incident.
Exactly, where they claimed that they had been attacked, that a U.S. Ship had been attacked by North Vietnamese PT boats. And so, gosh, we're just going to have to go and drop a lot of bombs on that country, which is what he did. Izzy was the only guy, I.F. Stone, at the time, who kind of cried foul on that and again, looked through documents and the after reports of this alleged incident. And he basically just said, I smell a rat here. I don't really think this is what happened. But unfortunately, the rest of the media, the mainstream media, the White House press corps, had no interest at all in investigating that. They went right along with the drumbeat for war. And aside from, I think, maybe two senators who voted against the Gulf of Tonkin resolution, Congress just went right along with the idea that, well, yeah, we obviously have to invade North Vietnam. That cost, obviously, an untold number of lives of Americans and Vietnamese.
Yeah. North Vietnam, I believe.
Yeah. And as Myra McPherson says in our documentary, Myra is the author, of course, of All Governments Lie, the book, which we optioned for this documentary. But as she said, if the rest of the media had followed Izzy and done some investigating, we might not have had that 10-year disaster. And of course, I.F. Stone, his little four-page newsletter, which he published out of his home with his wife helping with the accounting and the bookkeeping, and you could subscribe to it. It was four pages. It came out once a week. And you could always count on finding something in there that you were not going to read, even in the New York Times, the vaunted New York Times that many people even today think is you know, the high watermark of journalism. In fact, they didn't really do a very good job of questioning the reasons for invading Iraq either. So the problem is that people like Izzy in his day, he had his subscribers, but at best he had a few thousand. He eventually built it up to 70,000 subscribers. But you compare that to the audience that ABC, CBS, NBC had, especially then, when they were
tens of millions.
Yeah, and the advertising money they had to promote their newscasts. It's the same situation today for independent journalists. You have to almost be an investigative journalist to find out where the good independent investigative adversarial journalism is, because it's not on billboards all over your town. It's not on the side of buses. It's not on basic cable. But as you know, it is on radio stations like CIUT in the case of Democracy Now.
Since 2004.
Yay.
That's
excellent.
12 years now, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I just think it's a shame that, I mean, I frequently mention Democracy Now to people who you'd think would know about it. And it's surprising how many people don't know about Democracy Now, don't know about The Intercept, the website that Glenn Greenwald and Jeremy Scahill and Laura Poitras co-founded a couple of years ago, which is breaking story after story, primarily exposing government deception.
So where do you think the future of journalism lies? A lot of people say print journalism, well, everyone says it's in decline. TV journalism is turning mainly towards entertainment, and online, what they call journalism, is mainly clickbait, just to draw people in without any story at all. So can you talk about the paths that this new investigative journalism in the style of Stone is taking?
I think there are a few different paths. It's true that there is so much information on the internet that you have to sort through, and you have to develop your own bullshit detector, basically, and try to find out who you think is authoritative. But certainly, The Intercept is a good model.
Can you talk about that? Like, who funds that?
Okay, that came about when Pierre Omidyar, the founder of eBay, contacted Glenn Greenwald, and I think he contacted Jeremy Scahill as well, and he knew they were friends and working together on a possible. I think they were planning to start their own website, actually, and he probably heard about that. And he had been funding an independent investigative website in Hawaii, where he lives, a statewide news website. And I guess he decided he wanted to put some of his millions into doing that on a national and international scale. And he liked what Greenwald was doing. And so he asked Greenwald and Scahill and Laura Poitras if they would be interested in starting a major investigative journalism website, which he was willing to fund with a substantial amount of money. And you know, so and promise that there would be funding over a number of years and that he would give them the time to build up a staff, and which includes hiring researchers as well as writers and reporters, you know, story editors, supervising editors, lawyers, which you always need when you're doing investigative reporting.
So it's sort of like an old school newspaper, what newspapers used to be.
Or like in the movie Spotlight, when newspapers actually had investigative units, which they don't really these days because of budget cutbacks. They can barely afford to keep going just with kind of routine daily news coverage. So that's how it came about. It helps to have a wealthy patron, and he's got a completely hands-off policy. I mean, I think if you know Greenwald and Scahill, you know that there's no way they would tolerate any kind of. I mean, they've barely even met Omidyar, and certainly he has no influence on the journalism.
So it's done at arm's length.
Yeah, totally. So, but the good thing is that they have been able to hire top people. So that it's not just them, it's not just Glenn Greenwald and Jeremy Scahill breaking stories, it's a couple of dozen other outstanding journalists, some of them in Washington, some on the West Coast. And they, like I said, they're breaking story after story, much of it exposing the scale of government surveillance, that some of which came out of the Snowden documents, which I believe Greenwald has the only complete copy of today.
And this is all on The Intercept.
The Intercept, yep.
So another journalist takes a different path to support his investigative journalism. You talk to John Carlos Frey. Can you talk about him?
Yeah, John is a Latino journalist who specializes in exposing injustices against primarily undocumented migrants. And he has broken many stories. His research funding comes from an organization called the Nation Institute. His research funding comes from the Nation Institute. It's kind of an offshoot of the Nation magazine. But it's a totally nonprofit organization that is supported, I guess, with foundation grants and, again, some wealthy patrons, I suppose, who are willing to donate money to fund real journalism, independent investigative journalism. Jeremy Scahill was a fellow of the Nation Institute. I believe Chris Hedges, who's also in our documentary.
So it's a way for journalists not to worry about the next news cycle, to take the time they need to pursue a story.
Exactly. They get a bare bones stipend to support them on long-term research, digging into investigative projects. And John Carlos, as he says in our documentary, he'll frequently spend months, even more than a year, just to get all the documents he needs, the videotape, whatever, to expose, again, in his case, mainly injustice, mistreatment, even the deaths of undocumented migrants at the hands, in some cases, of the U.S. Border Patrol. So he wouldn't be able to do his work without that support from the Nation Institute. Once he has the story in hand and he's got the goods to do a great expose, he sometimes will go to a mainstream media outlet. He took one of his stories to 60 Minutes and it ran on 60 Minutes. He's taken other stories to Dateline, PBS, but they wouldn't fund him to do the research. They'll take it once he's got the smoking gun. That's the way he works. He's not getting rich doing it, that's for sure.
But there are journalists working in the mainstream media, print media, private, profit-making media, that are doing investigative journalism. Matt Taibbi is a good example. I like a quote he has on your show. He says, the political stance of the mainstream media, What we call right-wing and liberal media in this country are really just two different strategies of the same kind of nihilistic lizard brain sensationalism. It's a great quote. Could you talk about Matt Taibbi?
Yeah. Well, one of the great things about Matt is that he has this devilish sense of humor and this acerbic wit in all of his writing, all of which has a very serious point to it. Very, very investigative. He specializes in politics and Wall Street, and exposing hypocrisy and injustice, you know, in both of those areas. And some have compared him some have described him as kind of a cross between I.F. Stone and Hunter S. Thompson, who also wrote for Rolling Stone, Hunter S. Thompson, of course, and did some really serious journalistic work. Sometimes people forget about that and concentrate on his craziness, his gonzo-ness. But anyway, Matt Taibbi, is a little more serious, perhaps, or consistently turning out serious investigative journalism. But it is written with wit and flair. You just gave a good example of his writing. He is working for Rolling Stone, which you could say is part of the mainstream media, but it's not owned by a huge corporation. As far as I know, it's still basically owned by the guy who started it. It is not quite the same as like a gigantic network that is in turn owned by a gigantic entertainment company such as ABC owned by Disney, that kind of thing. The freedom that Matt Taibbi has at Rolling Stone is way beyond what reporters at, you know, NBC would have or something like that. And he uses it to good effect. Jan Wenner is, I believe, the editor and publisher, and he is he's known for giving his reporters a lot of leeway.
Long leash.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So what is the danger? I mean, for years people have considered the New York Times as the paper of record, all the news that fits to print. But what have we seen in its behavior, especially during the Gulf War, the second Gulf War?
Well, it was an eye-opener even to me. I used to think that the New York Times was just the greatest, you know, and they do some outstanding work, and they have some outstanding journalists. But their record in the run-up to the invasion of Iraq was, in the words of Carl Bernstein, you know, the guy who helped bring down a president along with Bob Woodward in the Watergate scandal. He's in our film, as you know, and he says, in the case of the run-up to war in Iraq, the New York Times was the most egregious in, you could say, being cheerleaders or being dupes of the government or mouthpieces or a conveyor belt for the statements coming out of the White House. I mean, it was just, and we point out in the film, as you know,
the whole issue of weapons of mass destruction.
Exactly. And how Dick Cheney would be on Meet the Press saying to Tim Russert, well, don't believe me. You know, it was in the New York Times this morning. And of course, that's a story that he and the White House had planted in the New York Times.
So sort of a circle where the government provided the news, it was planted, and then the government says, look, it's already in the newspapers.
Exactly. And if that can happen in the New York Times, imagine where else it can happen and is happening.
Finally, what should readers today look for in I.F. Stone-style journalism?
I think it would be good if we could encourage people with our film, that's what I hope to do, to encourage them to be a little more critical about where they're getting their news from. And if all of your news is coming from news agencies, TV stations, and newspapers that are owned by giant corporations, just ask yourself, do you want all of your news to be coming basically from giant corporations? Wouldn't it be good to have a more balanced diet, at least, and get some fiber in there in the form of independent, investigative, adversarial journalism like Democracy Now!, you know, like The Intercept? Search it out. You do have to search it out, but it is out there. Much of it is on the internet.
Thanks so much for talking with me.
Thank you.
Fred Peabody's new film, All Governments Lie, is having its world premiere on September 9th at the Toronto International Film Festival. Go to tiff.net for showtimes. This is Daniel Garber, the Movies, each Friday morning on CIUT 89.5 FM and on my website, culturalmining.com.